Yesterday I said this, that maybe we want to get rid of this talkative side of ours. Maybe we would like to close this radio channel office. Yes, that's how we feel sometimes, that this is really getting into our nerves, and it's simply disturbing. Simply disturbing makes basically many things more complicated and messy, and we feel kind of alienated. We feel something is lacking. We feel not whole and complete. So of course we would like to get rid of that. That causes it. Quite often, and that's what we can hear if we talk with people about their practices. They might say that it's really annoying that mind is just producing thoughts and thoughts and thoughts, and it's really difficult to do practice. And but that's exactly how it is. And we know, of course, that thoughts are accompanied by feelings, emotions, which them in turn produces more thoughts. And since it feels so strongly, we feel it so strongly, it feels so heavy in our system, this thinking and emotions comes and goes, and that it feels quite difficult to believe that perhaps the whole problem is not that impossible to cure, because I think it feels way too more worse than actually it is serious. Of course, consequences are very serious, but the illness itself is not at all incurable. Japanese modern haiku poet, who actually happened to become also a Zen monk at one point. Too bad that I can't really remember his that story, how he ended up, but it's quite fun. It's a little bit like this. I mean, this might be even exactly. So he got drunk, because that was what he did often. And he got drunk, and someone took him into the Zen temple. Maybe it was like that he woke and he was in Zen temple. Woke up. Nevertheless, it was after this passing out after drinking that he ended up to Zen temple and became a monk. What a lovely story. So his monk career started with the heavy headaches, but he couldn't really manage to keep his priesthood, like he couldn't stay in one temple very long time, and so he wandered away after some time, and he did begging, this takuhatsu. He did this begging a lot. That was actually his living, way of living also. So he was begging there, and earned enough money. So he was a poet, very modern, kind of one of those fathers of Japanese modern haiku. So that was enough about that. But so he wrote in, there's one little couple of sentences that I will now read from his diary. August 8, 1940. His name is Santoka. You have probably heard, Santoka Taneda. Those who don't know the meaning of weeds don't know the mind of nature. Weeds grasp their own essence and express its truth. Weeds grasp their own essence and express its truth. So he is not trying to get rid of weeds. Neither should I or you. Because those are, we know, they are really they are teachers of ours, and they are something that we will turn out to be completely different thing at one day. Those things that we want to avoid are those things that will actually save us. Because there, hidden in the weeds, is that key that we lost. And we can't find it without getting into the weeds. I like this story of the rabbi who was searching his lost keys under the street light. And this student of his came and asked if he could help him. "For sure, please." And they both searched, but couldn't find. They couldn't find rabbi's keys. And then the student asked that, "Are you sure, rabbi, that you, that here it is where you dropped them?" And he said, "No, I'm sure I didn't drop them here, but here is a good light for search." So he couldn't find his keys there. And I quite often remember this when, if I feel that I try to avoid of getting into the darkness, getting into the weeds, getting into those uncomfortable places, of course I would rather stay where there is a light and kind of a easy short grass, no ticks. But that is the fight we fight. That is the fight we fight again and again. We try for any cost to not to go there, not to get there, not to get But if we come back to our practice, if we come back to our cushion, if we do face the wall again and again, it comes. It becomes obvious that we have to face those things. We have to face those monkey mind thoughts. We have to face this wild ox that is pulling our cards into the ditch again and again. I remember very well when I heard these kind of advices that we have to embrace or become really closer and closer for what is happening exactly now. And I heard it, but I really probably believed it. I didn't believe it in, or I didn't just thought about it so much. But it's been only when I have done those kind of things and experienced how it is that I have understood that indeed they sound so obvious and some kind of a nice talk. You have to face your demons. But it is so. And we might think that it's some kind of a therapy thing, that maybe we should go to therapy and fix those things there. Of course, that's one alternative. Maybe a little bit for different reasons. I'm now talking about facing those things. It's great if we want to study our way to react with things, for example, with some specialists. Absolutely right. But even then, we have to face those things if we do zazen. And we will learn when we are ready that every time we stay where we are, every time when we don't turn our backs and walk away from this uncomfortable place where we find ourselves while doing zazen, we come more free, we become more free. The very moment we don't run away, we become soon more relaxed. After some turbulence, after some horrific moments maybe, but then, and little by little, we see that those weeds, those things, are actually our friends. They just have the mask of devil. But then again, it's not something we can decide necessarily that I will do. We do it when it's time for that. A little by little. We don't take like the whole portion at once. We take what we can take. And then we turn our awareness again back to some other kind of material that we don't need to face these and things necessarily just then. So why I'm repeating this is that there is not so many moving parts in this practice. We might have this idea of enlightenment as some kind of a outer world out there, some kind of a completely different dimension. And we kind of can hold on that idea and get some kind of story going on, an intellectual entertaining thing, and then we think that now we know a little bit more about it and we're happy and now we have a new idea about it. And then, of course, after a short time, we realize that it doesn't work. So no shortcuts, no alternative realities is here served. It is this only one we have here now. And how just to drop away this unnecessary fear of being here and now. They are very sophisticated, very delicate little moving parts that are causing us to feel uncertain. They're very delicate little things here and there, so we have to pay a lot of attention when we do this practice. So we start to recognize those small little movements in our emotions and thoughts and to be more aware of those. So also I mentioned this, those six paramitas we have represented kind of metaphorically on the altar. And I had this image of the person who can throw those one ball at a time and learning throw more. And this is how I see this also. In course of time, in practice, we find a new ball and we can add it. And now we have one more and we can make even bigger Enzo with those balls throwing them in the air. So that's just saying that it is something we can practice, and it will naturally give us more freedom to function, more tools, if you will, to deal with different kind of challenges. But we only have two hands. So there will be limit how many we can handle, and that's fine. To be even, if we even can throw one, is actually quite a wonderful thing. But then we have this Avalokiteshvara, Guan Yin, Kanseon, Bodhisattva, who has thousands of arms, 10,000 arms, perhaps, hands. You can imagine how many balls she can handle. Hundreds of thousands. We know that this Guan Yin, Kanseon, someone who sees and hears the cry of the world. So when we cry, when we feel this moment of too much something, we cry. And if we cry, this Avalokiteshvara will hear it. And one of her many arms comes to us and will help us. We are not separated from her, obviously. Although we have two hands, but we have millions of possibilities of using them. Even person without hands have those hands, without actual hands. It's a very beautiful little text by Dogen Senzi. Let's listen. It's really, we could say, very poetic. So we don't need to try to understand it at all. We just feel it. We just feel it in our bodies. Words of the ancient is this now. The whole universe in the 10 directions is one eye. And furthermore, there are thousands of eyes on the tips of the fingers. There are thousands of eyes of right Dharma. There are thousands of eyes in the ears. There are thousands of eyes on the tip of the tongue. There are thousands of eyes on the tip of the mind. There are thousands of eyes of the thoroughly realized mind. There are thousands of eyes of the thoroughly realized body. There are thousands of eyes on the top of a stick. There are thousands of eyes in the moment before the body. There are thousands of eyes in the moment before the mind. There are thousands of eyes of death in death. There are thousands of eyes of liveliness in liveliness. There are thousands of eyes of the self. There are thousands of eyes of the external world. There are thousands of eyes in the concrete place of eyes. There are thousands of eyes of learning in practice. There are thousands of eyes aligned vertically. There are thousands of eyes aligned horizontally. How do we understand this? I would only say that it is a picture of pictures. It explains the whole reality as it is, aliveness of it. And that is our home. This is the picture of our very home, here and now. We have this Japanese calendar in the kitchen. And the last year's calendar, I saved it, and since it has nice little wisdom in every day, for every day. So here you will get one. I even read it in Japanese, although we don't understand it. Isn't it really big difference? Anyways. Me o hira geba. Doko ni demo. Oshie wa aru. Also very beautiful. And it goes like this in English. If you keep your eyes open, you will see the teaching everywhere. I'm very grateful for this session and for this practice, because I'm very much aware of how stubborn I am, how slowly I will mature. I wouldn't never know that how slowly this process is. I remember some glimpses here and there when I felt that I have realized something, which is true. But what I didn't know then was that these dipping one's mind into the big ocean, although it's so vast and refreshing experience and important, there is so much other stuff, and this other stuff is just what we can refer as weeds, for example. And then this trying not to see that side, trying to ignore it, trying to explain it into something different, trying to convince oneself that it's not really part of this thing. That has been I don't say it has been a mistake, but it has been just something that needed its time for so that I have started to see that is actually also a very, very essential part of the whole path. And since I have accepted this fact, I think my practice has become much more interesting. And also appreciation for that vastness, limitless, unborn heart, mind, has become even more interesting, even more important, even more beautiful. So I'm very positive about this practice and optimistic that we definitely have a treasure at our hands when we have this practice. And it doesn't matter if this takes ions after ions to work this work. Because what else there is? This practice actually engulfs everything. Whether it is cutting the vegetables or vacuuming the floor or brushing one's tooth or teeth. Always. There is always some weeds. I will get stuck. I'm actually going to see dentist next week. And we will check, is it teeth or tooth? I will actually get a few spare parts, I mean, few extra, because they have been lost in the course of a practice. So, I think I'm quite happy with this talk so far, but still I will read before we end this introduction from the one koan called Humon's Medicine and Sickness Cure Each Other. Medicine and sickness cure each other. I can read the koan itself also. So introduction goes like this. The clear-eyed man knows no restriction. At one time he stands on the top of the mountain, with the weeds thick around him. At another time he is in the bustle of the marketplace, enjoying perfect ease of mind. When he displays the wrath, rage, could I say rage? Instead of spelling this word because it's too difficult. When he displays the rage of nada, he is three-faced and six-armed. When he shows the mercy of the sun-faced, and moon-faced. He gives forth the all-embracing light of blessing. In every particle, he reveals all the bodies of the Buddha. Mixing with people, he trudges through the mire. When he performs a transcendent action, even Buddhas cannot follow him, and they are driven back thousands of miles. Is there anyone among you who can go with him and act with him? See the following. And then Umon said to his disciples, medicine and sickness correspond to each other. The whole earth is medicine. What is yourself? This case very much resonates for what we have been talking in this talk. Medicine and sickness correspond to each other. The whole earth is medicine. Who and what is yourself? May all beings attain the Buddha way.